I am doing super today, Adam. I am coming off a high from the Day of Wonder yesterday and from a new episode of Supergirl yesterday. And I'm super pumped for the premiere of Legends tonight and a new episode of Arrow tonight as well. So I am just in DC euphoria right now over all this new content. But I thought that would be a good thing to talk about. Why don't you tell me how you're doing, my super friend, which would be the Day of Wonder. And happy belated Day of Wonder, Adam. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was hoping we could talk about what we did yesterday.
Yeah, well, I'm doing well, first and foremost.
Good.
Excited about all this cool DC TV being back.
Oh, yes, indeed.
It's given us something to watch throughout the week.
Oh, yes, indeed it has.
and yeah, so everything's good on that front. And then in terms of the Day of Wonder, I actually was totally unaware that thing was going on. But I will celebrate by reiterating that I think Wonder Woman is an awesome character. It's one of the most consistent DC books around, month to month, or every 2 weeks, as it has. And I will also say that Wonder Woman still remains my favorite DC connected universe film to this point. So that's my nod to the Day of Wonder.
Cool.
What about
well,
you? You
my mean? Favorite DCU film is Man of Steel, but I, of course, love Wonder Woman as well, the film and the character. So yesterday for the Day of Wonder, unfortunately, I had to work for most of the day, so I didn't get to do as much Wonder Woman stuff as I would have liked to. If I had been able to, what I would have done is reread what's going to be my comic recommendation in this episode, so I won't spoil what that is yet, but it is a Wonder Woman.
I think I know what it is, because it's probably going to be the same one, so we'll just talk about how good it is then, if it is the same one. We'll mention how good it is if our recommendation happens to be the same.
Okay, well, that sounds good to me. I will hold off on that, though, but I will just say that is what I would have done if I had had the chance to yesterday, but unfortunately I had to work for most of the day. But I did wear a t-shirt with Wonder Woman on it yesterday, and I made a Twitter post about what Wonder Woman means to me. And then at night I watched the new episode of Supergirl starring Smallville alum Linda Carter, so there's a Wonder Woman connection there. So I did watch Wonder Woman on my TV screen last night, even though in that particular instance she was not playing Wonder Woman.
despite Jordan's incessant continuation of mentioning her as a Smallville alum, she is the original Wonder Woman, and Smallville is a secondary thing where she's concerned. It was a nice touch to have. I want to say that they timed that on purpose, but I can't say that for certain. But it was a nice circumstance that that she was on the day celebrating Wonder Woman.
Yes, indeed. And technically, she wasn't the first live-action Wonder Woman, because they did do that attempted thing with I think William Dozier did that in the 60s, following the success of Batman 66. He tried to do a Wonder Woman pilot that didn't take off. And then there was the, what's her name, Kathy There was the one in the early 70s too. Yeah, with
there's been a few, but I mean the only one that stuck, aside from the movie in terms of live action,
Kathy Lee Crosby, that was her name.
Yeah,
played Wonder Woman before Linda Carter.
There were two
live action Wonder Women,
but those didn't work out, and so Linda Carter rightfully gets the glory as the first official. Or first fully realized Wonder Woman on...
Okay, all right, that's fair, that's fair. I just wanted to point out she wasn't technically the first one.
Yeah, and also I've got to give credit to, now you can say Smallville alum, Adriana Palicki.
Yes, indeed.
Who was supposed to play Wonder Woman in that... Or who played Wonder Woman in that pilot.
Well, she did play her, yeah. She did play her for a pilot, yeah.
Never went anywhere, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, in hindsight, as much as I would have watched it, I'm kind of glad that all didn't shake out, because had it worked out and it lasted, you know, seven to ten seasons, we might have not gotten Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. So everything worked out the way it was supposed to. but yeah.
But before we get into our comic recommendation, I will say we have our countdown clock. And we are now officially, Adam, less than 2 months away from Aquaman, because we are 60 days away. Comes out, of course, on December 21st, which really, of course, now means December 20th. And today is October 22nd, as of us recording this.
Yeah.
So, very exciting there.
Yeah, the days have ticked down. I remember when it seemed like it was going to be forever before Aquaman came out, but it's not the case.
Well, I remember
anymore.
When it was 13 months till it, right after Justice League came out.
Yeah, so, but the days are ticking down, and I couldn't be more excited.
Absolutely.
And I can go experience an underwater, world. I can venture underwater without having to put on a life preserving vest, because I'm not a swimmer, so I can live vicariously through the movie.
Cool. Yes, I am super excited as well. You just went to Atlantis last week when we reviewed DC Superhero Girls Legends of Atlantis.
That's right. Yeah.
So going back to Atlantis in less than 2 months. So very excited for our trip to Atlantis.
Yeah.
But yes, let's get into our comic book recommendations, Adam.
Sure. I was going to recommend, and I think I am going to, whether it's the same as Jordan's or not, is, because I've only read Volume 1, but Wonder Woman Earth 1, Volume 1. Was that what you were going to recommend?
It was not, but I second your recommendation of that, because I love that story.
Oh, in that case, good then. it's Grant Morrison, and it's the Grant Morrison, the good Grant Morrison, the one where you don't need drugs to understand what's going on. And I don't want to spoil anything, because I want to encourage people to read it in light of the fact that 2's come out and I still haven't gotten it yet, but I plan to rectify that probably this Wednesday when I go to the Comic Star. They do some interesting twists with the mythos of Wonder Woman that I think really are quite shocking and unexpected, but make sense.
As Earth One books always do.
But they make total sense, and they don't betray the core essential elements of the character. And so, like I said, if you are not a monthly comics reader but want to get into, you know, the DC heavy hitters or the main characters, and you want to check out books that don't have a, you know, monthly commitment or whatnot, I definitely recommend the Earth One line in general. And if you're gonna dabble into some Wonder Woman, then Wonder Woman Earth One Volume One is probably your best bet, but also it's a good entry point, because, like I said, it does deal with her beginning, so it's a perfect you won't be confused with decades of continuity.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. It's a super origin story. I love Earth One Volume One of Wonder Woman. So yeah, I'm with you on that, but that was not what I was going to recommend.
Oh, good. So what's your recommendation?
So yeah, my recommendation, and this is my favorite Wonder Woman comic story ever, and that would be Volume 5 of the Smallville Season 11 comics, Olympus. Where
why
we see...
didn't I telegraph that? you can tell it's Monday. The brain's not functioning at full capacity.
Well, I wanted to reread this yesterday for Day of Wonder. I did not get a chance to, but I love this story so much. It's Superman and Wonder Woman teaming up. It gives us Diana's Smallville origin story. So we get flashbacks to her on Themyscira, meeting Steve Trevor for the first time. Then in the present day, we see Steve Trevor. He's working at the DEO, which is really cool. We get Director Bones in the story. You get three villains in the story, because you got Director Bones, you've got Felix Faust, and you've got Hades in the story. So super jam-packed on the villains front, and it is absolutely super. You get, like I said, Superman and Wonder Woman teaming up. Martha Kent and General Lane are in this story. There's a lot of super stuff with Lois in this story. It's just... it's an absolutely super Wonder Woman story. It's my favorite Wonder Woman comic book story. And, yeah, I absolutely love it. So, yeah, Volume 5 of the Smallville Season 11 comics. It's called Olympus. Absolutely
super. And I'm sure I'll be rereading that at some point because we're going to review those comics. So, yeah.
Yes, indeed we are.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Looking forward to that eventuality. All right, then let's get right into the news this week. Then.
Yes, well, we have a perfect segue this week. Let's just say this news week made me super happy because, okay, so this is a super segue because we have some Smallville news this week, my super friend.
Well, Smallville related. Smallville news.
Okay, technically that is true. Smallville-related news.
Well, you're going to get people falsely excited about some kind of revival. If you say it like that, and then we tell them the news and think, oh, crap, you know. I don't want people to be let down by you, the way you hype it up. So, the clarification.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. Maybe I did not say it as accurately as I could have. So, yes, I should clarify. So, anyway, what happened first was Melissa Benoist posted a picture of her and Tyler Hoechlin and Elizabeth Tulloch all on a farm.
Yeah, I actually shared that picture with Jordan as we finished recording last episode. Because
yes, it dropped right after we finished recording last episode.
That's how DC works. They release news right after we record. who knows what we're going to find out today, Monday, October 22nd. After so if there's news, it's probably because we were recording.
Well, yes. So, but it was a super treat to get as soon as we finished recording. I saw that. I mean, you remember, Adam, how much I was freaking out about that picture.
I do.
And so then that wasn't the end of it. So I was already freaking out about that picture. First of all, just seeing Clark and Kara and Lois all together, like I was just freaking out about that. But then and then I started speculating that maybe that's the Kent farm, and you know, that's what a lot of people were speculating, that we were going to see the Kent farm. And personally, for me, the Kent farm just in general is my favorite location in the entire DC universe. I love it so much. It holds such a special place in my heart. But then, very shortly after that, Melissa Benoist posted another photo, and it turns out that the Kent farm we are seeing in the Elseworlds crossover is the same one from Smallville. And that particular Kent farm holds even more special meaning to me than any other Kent farm. Like I said, the Kent farm in general is my favorite locale in the entire DC universe, but that Kent farm holds so much meaning to me, and I literally did such a big happy dance when I saw that, because I cannot even, the feeling I'm going to get seeing that again on TV, I just can't imagine how special that's going to feel. Like, I think back to the Smallville episode Homecoming in season 10, when we see Smallville High again, and it just, the feeling I get whenever I watch Homecoming, like, I'm expecting to get the same feeling seeing the Smallville Kent farm in Elseworlds, and I got almost that same feeling, because in Midvale, in season 3 of Supergirl, because they used the same school that they used for Smallville High for Midvale High on that episode, but it wasn't actually Smallville High in that episode.
The exterior of the school, you said.
Yes, the exterior. And so that gave me a very special feeling, But this is going to be, I think, even more special. Like, I cannot wait to see Clark and Kara and Lois there at the Kent farm. Like, it's just absolutely, I think it's going to be absolutely magical. I mean, the fact that that Kent farm, the Kent farm, my favorite Kent farm from Smallville that I have so many memories of, like, I just, I cannot get over how exciting this is. Like, I kept talking about last episode or whatever, as we were talking about some of the other crossover news that was coming. Like, I just kept getting more and more excited than I ever thought I could be for this crossover, and I was already, from the very start, super excited, but this just took it to a whole nother level. I mean, having the Smallville connection in there, oh my goodness, it's, I can't even, I'm going to pass it off to you, my super friend, because I'm just so giddy with excitement.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I like it on a couple of levels. Obviously, for the fact that, well, first of all, that super family picture, if you will, is great. I love it on several fronts because you see, first of all, because of the continuity of you know, the past season of Supergirl, we get to see just in this picture, and I don't know how the scene's going to play out, but we get to see Kara and Clark, you know, in a more relaxed setting because, you know, they're not in their superhero identities. They're not in Clark and Kara mode where they have to, you know, they're at the Catgirl and they're working, or you know, they don't have their guards up, their facades up. Here, I think it's going to take it to an extra level, the familial connection. I think we're going to get a larger dose of that. Mm-hmm. And then you add Lois to the picture. And I mean, she looks great as Lois. Just the general look of her. And I think, so I think, like I said, the fact that I thought she was fantastic beforehand, seeing her in sort of quote-unquote one Lois Lane costume, is cool. Also, this is a version of Superman, like a more established version where he's got, you know, Supergirl around him. He's got Lois. We haven't seen a Superman this far in his career interacting with Supergirl and Lois on a live action screen before. So that dynamic alone is interesting to me. Very interesting.
Yes, that's true.
It's kind of breaking new ground because Smallville is still the origin story of Superman. So, of Clark becoming Superman. So it's not, you know, yes, Lois was there and yes, Kara was there, but it's not, it's different because of Clark's level of experience.
It's the same thing I always say about Ben Affleck's Batman, how we'd never seen a live-action Batman before who was that far into his career when we meet him.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Tyler Hoechlin's Superman.
Yeah.
We've never seen a live-action Superman before who's that far into his career when we meet him, who's already encountered a lot of his rogues.
Right.
Who, like we've never seen that before.
So I like it on that level. Then if you're talking just the Kent farmhouse, obviously it's a cool, you know, tip of the hat, a nod to the, you know, to the legacy of DC live action, you know, with you know, so with the Smallville connection and so on. It's a nice nod to the past,
which the Arrowverse always does a super job with.
Yeah, in one way or another, bringing in certain guest stars. Yeah, and but the other aspect of it that I like is that house, regardless of whether it's on Smallville or whatever, let's say, version it would have been on. And they managed to do this, and I think partly they got lucky, was they found a house that looks virtually identical to the version in Superman for All Seasons, which is a fantastic Superman story, as we've both mentioned.
It's my all-time favorite comic book story, right. Yep, Superman for All Seasons.
So the fact that it looks virtually identical to that comic book iteration on the house.
And so does the barn.
Really, you know, aside from having to build the facade of this stuff, which they would have if it was any other scenario, but the fact that they lucked out and actually found a viable, location in existence that looks so close to that version is great. And I'm glad that that they're reusing that as, for that reason as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a win-win scenario for me on all levels.
Totally with you, my super friend. I can't wait. Well, we have some more super news, which is, this is not specifically pertaining to the Elseworlds crossover, but we have news that the greatest fictional villain of all time is coming to Supergirl this season, and that would be none other than Alexander Luthor. He is coming to Supergirl. We don't have a casting yet for him. In fact, they haven't even begun the process of casting him yet, but we do know that he is coming to Supergirl, and I could not be more excited for this. Like I was saying, he's my favorite fictional villain of all time. I cannot wait to see him on Supergirl. We've gotten so many teases with him. I mean, with Lena always talking about him, with Lillian always talking about him. We've seen the Lexo suit. We've seen Luthor Mansion. In fact, speaking about the Lexo suit, I would love if we see Lex in the Lexo suit when he comes to Supergirl, because we've never seen Lex in the Lexo suit in live action before, and I think there's a good chance we see it, because we just saw the Lexo suit for a third time on Supergirl in last night's episode as of us recording this. So I would love to see that. I cannot wait to see who gets cast. The Arrowverse has such a super job, has done such a super job with casting in the past, so I'm fully confident in whoever they bring in. My hope would be that they play the role in a similarly cold and calculating way to what Michael Rosenbaum gave us on Smallville. But my fan cast, I'll go ahead and say my fan cast is Tom Welling. I know that's not very likely because he said in the past that he wouldn't do it, but that's just my fan cast. I'll just throw it out there because of how super a job he did as Clark Luthor on Smallville. I just think he would be absolutely super as Lex, and it would be such a fun twist to see him play Lex after having played Clark. But in any case, whoever the cast, I am super excited to see. I'm super excited to see how Lex plays into the story, and just getting another live-action iteration of my favorite villain of all time. Like, I cannot wait, my super friend. By the way, I should specify, yeah, he's not going to be in the Elseworlds crossover, if I didn't make that clear. But he will, and we don't know exactly when he's showing up, but he will be later on in Season 4 of Supergirl. So, yes, what are your thoughts, my super friend?
Well, I mean, I like the fact that we're getting him on Supergirl. I think it was almost a foregone conclusion because of the amount of times he's referenced and sort of the, even though he hasn't been present yet, the effect he has on Lena, regardless, mm-hmm. right? So that was, I think, the name drops and the importance he has on her story, regardless, just made it a foregone conclusion. But now the fact that you're bringing in, you know, Lois into this world, and you're bringing back Superman into this world, it was almost, like I said, it was just a matter of, it wasn't if, it was when. So it pleases me that he's coming on. I think they will play him in the same, you know, in that vein, because that is, you know, the way Michael Rosenbaum played him is pretty much the way he is perfect. In the comics now. Yeah, well, yeah. The way he is in the comics now, for that, uh-huh. has been for the last, I don't know how many years, 22 or so years. So we're going to get something along those lines. In terms of casting, I don't really have a pick, you know, again, the Arrowverse casting capability has been second to none. So I am putting my full faith in...
Well, second to Smallville.
In certain instances, I disagree, but so I'm putting my faith into Rappaport casting, or whoever, which I think will handle the casting.
Yeah, again. David Rappaport. Yeah.
So I have no qualms or no issues or no doubts about who they'll cast. I'm sure they'll find someone appropriate and very capable of bringing this character back to life on live action TV. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think...
I know that beeping sound is not the money truck the CW is backing into Michael Rosenbaum's driveway. Because he is not going to be... I think I can say with 99.8% certainty that it won't be Michael Rosenbaum. So for anybody peddling that desire on social media, you're going to be disappointed if you cling to that fantasy.
Yeah, and what I'll say about that is, and this I think might surprise some people, I would prefer it not to be Michael, and you know this, Adam, I've said it many times, Michael's Lex is my favorite live-action villain performance
we both agree,
all time.
Yeah, okay, well, not on that part, but we both agree that he's the best Luther, so yeah, we do.
We do, but you've heard me say this, he's my favorite live-action villain performance ever, period.
Yeah.
But the reason I would actually prefer they get somebody new, I want somebody who plays him in a similar vein to what Michael did, but I want somebody new because each time we get a new live-action take on a character in a different universe, I want to see another person in the role. Like, yeah. Does that make sense?
A new Superman should have his own Lex Luthor.
Like, exactly.
That would have been like, okay, Tyler's Superman, let's bring in Erica Durant because she's done it before. It's one thing of when it's a tip of the hat to history, but that is going a degree too far.
Legacy casting is perfect. Like I would love to have Michael on Supergirl, but in a different role.
Yeah,
true. Like that's the way I see it.
Right.
It's one thing if it's a minor role, like Paul Reubens coming back from Batman Returns to play the Penguin's father on Gotham, just because it was such a minor role in Batman Returns.
He didn't really do anything aside from.
But for a major role, I want to see more. I want to see somebody new in the role each time we get a new version of the character. But I mean, Michael will always be my favorite. Always. I mean, I'll just go ahead and say it right now. But but even so, I want to see somebody new in the role. So that's just me. But. What I will also say about this is this makes me even more confident that what they're developing Metropolis into is a Superman show, because I really do think they're setting up. I mean, Superman's appearing again on Supergirl this season, or on Supergirl and on The Flash and Arrow because of the Elseworlds crossover. We're getting Lois as well. For two of that parts of the Elseworlds crossover, and now we're getting Lex on Supergirl. Like, I really do think they're setting up for Metropolis to, because we know Metropolis is being redeveloped, I really do think they're going to turn that into a Superman spinoff from Supergirl. So this just makes me even more confident.
And remember, because it's being redeveloped, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to go on the streaming service.
That's true, too.
Right? So once it goes into the redevelopment process, it's a whole new ballgame. So, I've been under the belief that it is, you know, to me, whether it's, I think it is going to be, I think we are ultimately, despite the fact that people are saying that, well, or people are because, you know, there was a rumor saying that that sources were saying that Tyler Hoechlin led Superman spinoff was in the works, but now people have come out to debunk that. Now, again, just because they're debunking that right now doesn't mean that once the crossover airs, that then it's revealed now. But regardless of whether it's a Tyler Hoechlin led spinoff or not, I think what we should take away from this is that at some point down the line here, Superman is being brought back to TV. Particularly because there is currently no plans for the immediate future for a Superman film. So with that being said, that's what leads me to believe that whether it is a spin-off of Supergirl with Tyler Hoechlin and, you know, Elizabeth Tulloch and whoever plays Lex Luthor, or if it's a totally new Superman, totally new Lex, totally new Lois, Superman, in my opinion, whether it's this year, next year, or 2 years from now, I believe he's coming back to TV.
In a starring role.
Yeah.
And of course, because obviously we know he's back on TV now on Supergirl.
Yeah, that's what
in a starring role, yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And or quasi-TV, like the DC Universe.
If it ends up on the DC Universe, yeah.
Just clarifying. But yes, oh my goodness, I am super excited about that prospect. Oh my goodness. But yes, anyway, super excited about this news about Lex, regardless of who gets cast, what it means for the future. But just, oh my goodness, such exciting news, my super friend.
Agreed.
All righty. Well, it is time for us to talk about the next episode of Batman Animated Series, which is I've Got Batman in My Basement. And, of course, we've got our IMDb description. Now, what are you thinking, Adam? One sentence or two sentences?
I mean, it's got to be one.
Adam, you're never going to believe it. It's two sentences.
But so hold on a second. On the superior episodes, they go one sentence. And on the just okay episodes, they go two. I don't get it.
Hey, I love this episode.
I figured you would, but it's not one of my standouts. It doesn't mean I hate it. It's just not one of my standouts.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I guess I will read the IMDb description, though.
Sure.
These two sentences here. While trying to thwart Penguin's robbery of a rare Fabergé egg, Batman is weakened by exposure to a toxic gas. He takes shelter in a basement apartment belonging to a teenaged amateur detective. Now, this episode is directed by Frank Parr and written by Sam Graham and Chris Hubbell.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
And, go on.
What do you think?
What do I think of this episode?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I love this episode. I think it's so much fun to sort of see something that we don't often see, which is like kids in Gotham City and like them growing up and like what they think of Batman. Like, I think that's so cool. The part where they sort of rescue Batman. Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Carrie Kelly in The Dark Knight Returns when she gets Batman into the Batmobile and helps save him there. So that reminds me a lot of that. There are also elements, I feel like, of Home Alone in this story with the kids home alone and the robbers trying to break into the house like Penguin and his goons.
Yeah, that's a good call. Good call, Rob. Yeah.
Thank you. And I also just Batman saving kids. Like, I feel like that's always powerful.
Right.
So I like seeing that. I think it's a really fun episode. I think the Penguin's got a lot of really fun lines. Like, the one that always cracks me up is when he tells his goons, he's like, after you, gentlemen, and I use that term lightly.
His insults are top-notch, yeah.
What's that?
His insults are top-notch.
Yes. So that cracked me up. But yeah, I just think this is a really fun episode. It's a unique episode. I love seeing how they look up to Batman especially when I was a kid, being a kid who loved Batman, seeing these kids in this episode who loved Batman, I was able to relate to them then, and I'm still able to relate to them now. So I love this episode. How about you, my super friend?
I like it. It's okay. The things that I like about it is, first and foremost, it's the introduction of the Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a positive. To my knowledge, it's the first time we see the Penguin, right?
Yeah, in production order. In terms of airing order, that I'm not sure. I'll look at it while
you're... For the purposes of this rewatch, it's the first time we see the Penguin.
Yes, because we're doing this in... Because there's two very different orders that you can watch Batman Animated Series in, which are production order and air date order. We're doing production order. In air date order, while Adam's talking, I'm going to look see if it's the first appearance of him in air date order, because I'm not sure.
What I like about this version of both the Twitter hand and stuff like that, but it's also especially the way he's dressed, more humanoid appearance. It's also the Batman 66 Penguin portrayed by Regis Meredith, and the Fabergé is something that is a nod to Batman 66. So I like that. The other aspect that really works with me is the Batman Saves angle, because I like just how protective and defensive, but I guess when kids are involved,
It is first in airs, though.
Okay,
so, you know,
cool.
So,
I always shoot them. The show's done, despite the episodes, the show's always done a good job of Batman, a way to portray Batman in those episodes while he's defending or protecting kids. And I kind of like the idea that Bossy Land is of a teenager who thinks of himself as an amateur detective and has his own little Scooby gang kind of thing going on. So yeah, though, I mean, the main elements that I enjoy about, but it's not one that really stands out or ends up about, you know, 5, 10, or even 20 episodes. But it's a, for sure.
Okay. Sounds good.
Anything else you want to add, or rate it?
I guess we can go ahead and rate it, my super friend.
All right, go ahead. What would you give this one?
It's an A for me.
All right. I'm going to give it a solid B.
Alrighty.
Just some breaking news, Jordan, what I think would be interesting.
We did get news during the middle of our episode.
Indeed. I don't know why. There's no reason why. There's no no official statement from everyone, but it's Gagado, so I'm just going to go ahead and read it.
Okay.
Super excited announced that thanks to the changing landscape, we're able to put Wonder Woman back to its right on June 2020. Be there or square. So, we are not getting Wonder Woman in November 1st of 2019, but instead, June 5th, 2020. This one, because I have to wait a little longer. If you would ask me why they're done, two reasons. I think because The Flash, schedule means it won't come out until 2021. I think they that opportunity to move Wonder Woman. If you remember, didn't the Wonder Woman come out in June?
Yes, it did.
So really, going back to the date that served them so well last time around. My two thoughts.
Well, it's kind of interesting to be getting both our live reactions to this. I
can't wait to see my Earth One Wife extra. I had to count that out.
My reaction is obviously disappointment because I want it to be here. Like, I want it to be here tomorrow. To be honest,
now you're stealing my lines.
Just because I'm so super excited about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately though, if they need more time to make it, if they can even improve on it in this extra 7 months that they have, then that's even like, yes, I'm willing to wait if we get an even better movie than what we've gotten already. Or, it is cool to continue the trend of it being released in early June. Like, that's cool. They started a tradition with all Wonder movies being released that way, sort of like how all live-action Batman movies of Batman v Superman. And actually, I'm not sure if Batman the movie was released in the summer.
Yeah, I don't have a date on that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I wasn't alive when it was released.
Yeah, Batman movies. Other than that, all live-action Batman movies have released in the summer. So if they started, and I think that's a cool trend with Batman movies. So if they started the similar trend with live-action Wonder Woman movies, then that could wind up being a cool trend. So disappointing that we have to wait a little bit longer, but it could come out of this change, and I'm sure we'll all be super excited to see it.
At our schedule, what we have here now is we have Wonder Woman in December.
No, Aquaman.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute, yeah. Aquaman. Then we have
Shazam in April.
April Shazam of 2020. And then we have in October of 2020, we have Joker. So, and again, that's another reason too. Why would you put...
Well, you mean 29th.
I'm jumping ahead. 29th, sorry, yeah. So, and why would you put, think about it, why would Joker and Wonder Woman a month apart? You'd be cutting into any potential...
Yeah, that's a very good point,
residual
too.
Residual Joker box office, right? So,
that's a very good point.
2020 we'll see, or 2019 we'll see Shazam and Joker.
Yep. Don't forget about Reign of the Superman.
We're just focusing on live action here for the purpose of what we're talking about. So there's those two in 2020, Birds of Prey, and then June, Wonder Woman. So we have an all-female 2020.
It does, just to keep the animation in mind, though, it separates, because originally the Wonder Woman Bloodlines animated movie and the live act and Wonder Woman 1984 were going to come out the same year. Now I guess they're not. So that is worth pointing out, I feel like. It might be important in this case, because originally Wonder Woman Bloodlines, I feel like, was going to release around the same time Wonder Woman 1984 next year, and now they're not going to release around the same time. So I just, I feel like...
If the Flash sticks to its schedule, in 2021 we could have the Batman and the Flash. Take that for what you will.
Absolutely, my super friend. So no matter which way you cut it, we have.
So
well. Now that we have our breaking news segment, we can move on to our second and final episode review for this podcast episode, which would be, we finally got for Titans, title Titans, and IMDb description, Adam?
Once.
Actually, Adam, you're never going to believe it. Two episodes, both our episodes this that we're reviewing on this podcast episode are two sentences.
Huh.
So, yeah.
Shocking, really.
Very shocking, yes. Well, here's our description of Titans. Dick Grayson has found a new home in Detroit when a girl named Rachel is brought to him with serious problems. A young woman named Coriander wakes up with no memory of who she is. So I guess we sort of got a sentence from the B-plot for this episode. So I guess that sort of makes sense that they had two sentences there. Directed, the pilot was directed by Brad Anderson and Greg Berlanti, former Smallville writer Jeff Johns, and Akira. Let's get into this episode, Adam, because I was blown away. As someone who grew up on the Teen Titans animated series, that was honestly the first things in DC period that I was exposed to was the DC. Well, I wouldn't say exposed to. I would say it was one of the first DC animated shows that I watched. So it wasn't technically because there was a lot, actually, now that I think about it, that I was exposed to before that on VHS. So episode, I've talked about this before, you know, shows that I got to watch as they aired. That would be Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Teen Titans, and The Batman. And then a little bit later, Crypto, this Legion of Superheroes animated series, and then and so on and so on. But anyway, so this was one of the first DC shows that I ever watched as it aired, and I absolutely fell in love with it and fell in love with this team. That's what made me fall in love with Teen Titans as a kid. And so ever since, like, this has pretty much been a lifelong dream for me to see them in live action. And I remember when the TNT thing, heard this was coming on a streaming service, I was super excited, and it was, but we finally had it, and I was absolutely blown away by this. I mean, already, now we have two episodes that we've seen, but, you know, we're just reviewing the first one. But even after the first episode, I was able to say he is absolutely the best live action Dick Grayson we've ever had, even though he's playing a Robin who's sort of teetering on the edge, as we see, so much maturity and likability to the character. And I love that so much. As I suspected, based on the promotional material, the trailers and everything, they're really playing up the horror elements with Raven, and it's terrifying. I really, the death is after the second trailer, how it looked like they were going to play a similar dynamic with Dick and Dick and Damian have had in the comics, where Dick takes him under his wing, like sort of in those Batman and Robin comics in the late 2000s, the way we saw that. With when Dick was Batman and Damian was Robin. I feel like we're getting a similar thing with Dick and Rachel here, and I like Dick taking Rachel under his wing. There's a scene in the pilot, Adam, where when Rachel's mother was killed, and man, was that a shocking scene. Well, she gets a bullet to the head so quickly. Yeah. But the scene when Rachel reveals that to Dick, and you just see, and this is so, Brendan Thwaite's performance is so nuanced in that moment, and he's able to connect to that. And I love that. They're really doing some mysterious elements with Starfire that I absolutely love. Like, I'm so intrigued by this mystery. And we get to see Constantine Kovar in second live-action appearance. Of course, played iconically by Dolph Lundgren in Season 5 of Arrow. But now we see him here, and here, because it is a Titan show that we're seeing him on, really good chance we see Red Star at some point on Titans, which would be absolutely super. I would love that. Red Star animated series was one of the best, so I would love that. And he got the least amount of screen time, but I don't know about you, Adam, but just even based on his one little scene, I think Ryan Potter is going to be the breakout star of the show, because he is capturing Beast Boy's to a T. Just his excitement when he gets that video game, when he sees that he got it, like, I'm just like, yes, that is, he is capturing it so well. And just seeing his powers in live action for the first time, I mean, oh my goodness. I mean, I dreamed of that. I mean, I dreamed about seeing the Titans in Denver. One thing that I always sort of pictured in my head, and it looks so super. It's just, it's breath. Everything about this pilot clicked for me. I absolutely loved it. What are your thoughts, my super friend?
Okay, well, just to, because you brought it up, most recently, I'll touch on your kind of Ryan Potter.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, it's not much to go on the little bit we saw him in the pilot. However,
yeah,
just his energy and sort of exuberance and all that, the potential is there for him to be a breakout star.
Mm-hmm.
So you if everything shakes out, you could see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the rest of the pilot, you see, you mentioned Brandon Thwaites being, you're calling it him being the best live action Robin so far today.
Dick Grayson, I specified.
Dick Grayson. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go one step further. He's the best live action Dick Grayson and Robin, in my opinion.
Okay.
But then again, from my perspective, just saying that isn't enough, because for me, his competition wasn't as stiff to begin with. Like, it wasn't much of a, like, the bar was very low for me. and being that the character was of sorts, it wasn't much of a leap, but he exceeded the
jump. For me, the bar was already set pretty high. So for me, it's a little bit different. He even exceeded that by quite a bit. So
yeah,
I'll say that. Yeah.
So in terms of the rest of the pilot, what I liked about it was, in terms of the character, let me start with the character of Raven.
Uh-huh.
I love the fact that she knows there's something different about it, that something's off.
Uh-huh.
But she doesn't have a full handle on what that all is yet. And mm-hmm. I like the fact that we are discovering what's going on with Rachel, with her.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to her already being in full understanding of what she is and her abilities. I like going through that journey with characters. So I love that aspect of it.
It's similar to how Teen Titans Earth 1, because you brought up Wonder Woman Earth 1 earlier in this episode, it's similar to what Teen Titans Earth 1 did with her, where she didn't quite know what was going on with her powers.
Yeah. And then I also, in terms of Raven, the visual of her when she sees the demon aspect of her through reflective surfaces, and that's when she gets a look at the demon, at Raven, mm-hmm. essentially, was a cool twist, a cool way of doing it. And,
uh-huh.
and you know, when she, let's say, attacks, and it acts as, like, it's portrayed as, like, this out-of-body spirit kind of thing, that, mm-hmm. that was really cool. And they really played up the idea that it's almost like she has multiple personality disorder, or dissociative identity disorder, as it's called.
You bring up the thing with the mirrors. It sort of reminds me of vampires, how they look normal, and then you see them in a mirror, like, I think, to the Batman versus Dracula,
animated movie,
and the way they portray it there.
That's a good call.
Thank you.
And I love the fact that they really leaned in.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of I am so intrigued because she seemingly doesn't remember who she is.
Right.
Now, it leaves me with so many questions because did something happen to her to make her forget? Or are they playing it a little bit differently than the comics that the Starfire character of this person?
I did not think about that. Interesting.
Kind of like the Phoenix Force, but not evil, if you will.
I was thinking there's an episode in Superboy Season 1, and actually I think this alien comes back twice in Season 1 of Boy. This alien that, like, is able to inhabit people's bodies.
Sure.
And, like,
Okay.
Is it, you know what I'm talking about? And traps him in, like, this gas capsule, and then he escapes. But anyway, it could be... So you're saying Tamaranians in this inhabit other, like, people's bodies.
Yeah, so they have human hosts and stuff. Yeah,
that could be interesting, yeah. Friend.
So I'm curious which way they're leaning, but I will say that Anna Diop really... stole the scenes that she was in. There's something so alluring and exotic, especially about her eyes, like when you look at her eyes, that is really captivating. You really can't look away.
That scene with the doorman at the end where I think she really shines the most, where she's sort of playing it, like she's trying to get as much information out of him without revealing to him that she doesn't remember what happened. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That scene, she really, I think Anna Diop really killed it in that scene where she's like sort of playing it as like Starfire is trying to, she's trying to get pull one over on him and get as much information out of him, but she can't reveal to him that she doesn't remember.
Yeah, no, very good. So I really remember her performance, and she deserved to be the standout because of all the crap that she went through beforehand. So good on her for delivering in such a spectacular way.
Do you think Constantine Kovar's appearance?
I mean, anything's possible, really. It could very well happen. We'll have to wait and see. But I mean, remember, if not this season, that could be something developed for a follow-up season, right? So.
Yeah.
Never really know.
I mean, he didn't show up till season 5 of the animated series, so
right.
they could wait that out. But man,
when she burns him to a crisp, oh.
Oh, yes.
That was one. And I love the transition of how how the powers manifest, and she starts looking more like the comic iteration as her powers manifest. That was really cool. But the actual burn crisp, like, that's literally what you're seeing.
It reminded me of Batman 89 a little bit.
Right, yeah.
When the Joker does his
buzzer thing. I had the same feeling. In terms of Dick Grayson Robin, I think Brenton Thwaites was phenomenal. I love the fact that this is clearly an adaptation of the New Teen Titans run, the Marv Wolfman, George Perez, series.
Mm-hmm.
And it also takes place, also takes its cues from Chuck Dixon's run on Nightmare.
Yes, with him being a detective,
right.
Yeah.
And his partner is from that run as well.
Yeah, we're back, yeah.
Yeah, I liked when says that he tells his partner, I mean, not in specifically saying, yeah, I'm Robin and I left Batman because. He tells his partner and the audience that he left Batman because he had become violent and they struggled in terms of the way they did that was too different. Too much like Batman. And you could see that, you know, in the episode. You can see the, right, so... But,
yeah, it's like the new Batman Adventures episode, Old Wounds.
Yeah, but what I liked about the way they handled that was the fact that as he's talking to his new partner, she thinks he's talking about his old, you know, fellow detective.
Yeah.
Whereas he knows, and we know as the audience, that he's talking about Bruce Wayne Batman.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, that was cool.
It was a clever wordplay there.
Yeah.
I also liked the idea of the way they inserted the Batman references in this episode.
Uh-huh.
And the flashbacks. You see...
See Wayne Manor.
Well, yeah, you see a quick glimpse of Wayne Manor, especially the exterior, and a brief glimpse of the interior. But you also see... you know, there's a scene right after the death of his parents.
Uh-huh.
And you see the hand on the shoulder.
Yep.
Of young Dick Grayson, which we presume is Bruce.
And how haunting, I mean, we talked about it, particularly when we talked about the first trailer for Titans. How haunting is the way they portrayed Haley's Circus and that scene? I mean, that was just, but
well,
so
especially,
haunting.
Especially, again, especially because it's coming from...
From Raven's perspective. Yeah.
And then, you know, you and I have talked about how good the costume looked in pictures.
Oh, yes.
It looks even better in motion. And that fight scene was, again, the 2 seconds we got of it, the full-fledged fight was even better.
It's like almost BVS warehouse fight level good.
I think it is, but I think Titans goes there in episode 2, which we won't get to now.
Yes!
So...
Yes.
But back to this fight, like... First of all, he's dealing with he's tracking down criminals who you know traffic drugs to children, young teens. So
and there's a Batman Begins nod there with them putting them in the stuffed animals.
Yes, yeah. So he's tracking. So these people are like. So when you see that, they're already scum. Like you don't know they're scum. Like you already have the sense that these guys are scum. The second thing is. You know, when he's observing, and I love the fact that you see him doing the detective work and observing, you know, he's got the files in the car and he's really over them. So you see this sense of, and so you learn that the ringleader of this gang is also, you know, beating his child from the dialogue we get from Dick and the photos we see of her with bruises and all of the stuff all over his arms and stuff. So this guy is, you know, like he is... If you look at the characters in the dictionary, I mean, his picture would be front and center.
Yeah.
So when Robin kicks the living shit out of him, it's very much justified, especially when you look at how Robin respond or Dick responds to helping Raven and how much, you know, being little children is important to him.
I mean, yeah, we were just talking about it with Batman in... I've got Batman in my basement, but yeah, you look at it here with Dick as well, yeah.
So you can understand why he would go to those extremes against these guys.
Yeah.
And when he breaks the window
and grinds
the guy's face against the broken glass of the window, man, I'm like, you know what, that's a little gruesome, but I love it because the guy deserves it.
And that was the second time in that fight when he did something like that to somebody because there was the other guy who scraped
his
head against
the concrete of the wall.
Yeah, oh my goodness, that was gruesome.
And then when he pulls him out of the car and he's just kicking him like wrestling style where when he's down, he's like stomping on him. That was cool.
And then that's right before and then he walks away and he says the now iconic F Batman line.
And again, let me just say that was all taken out of context in the trailer. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, so I think that line worked perfectly.
Yeah, so for everybody that took that trailer out of context, F you. To quote Rob. But no, the fight was great. I like the moodiness of it all with the fog and everything else like that. And as a martial artist, the stunt coordination and the fight choreography was very much on point. So I as somebody who's done, you know, martial arts for over 20 years, I really appreciated the authenticity of that. It looked really good. And especially with Brenton Thwaite's stunt doubles use and manipulation of the bow staff.
Yes!
It was very, very...
when he launches it out and hits both those guys, like, oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. So the fight was great. And then the Rachel and Dick stuff.
Uh-huh.
Look, for what I think the show did a great job was juxtaposing Dick's brutality as Robin, but then his kindness and calming effect that he has with Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like every time he puts on the Robin costume, it's like it triggers like a PTSD of like negative memories of training with Batman or something.
It sort of reminds me, Adam, of what they explored with Green Arrow, season 5 of Arrow. How in the flashbacks he was telling KG Beast, he was like, "When I put this monster," and so like he tries to put the monsters in the hood, and he tries to separate those two things. So he's Oliver when he's out, and then he puts all his rage and everything and all his violence, and then that just comes with the debate that KG Beast has with him, where he's like, you know, you can't do that, you can't like that, and just it doesn't work. But anyway, on Titans, I sort of see a similar thing, especially the way you're describing it with Dick. So yeah,
yeah, and just like the cool thing with you know, they're both sort of what you see, and what I like about this Rachel and Dick Grayson, you know, pairing is the fact that they're both within the very episode. And B, both struggling with the darkness within them. I mean, with Raven, with Raven, it's more literal. So, I really like that. And despite breaking away from sort of like thinking of Batman as being a negative influence, he's certainly a positive. And took a positive thing from Batman and Bruce, and that, you know, caring for, you know, a child who needs something good came out of his time with Batman, and I think that's important too.
And even though we don't see this till the second episode, I'll bring it up because it was in one of the trailers, so I feel like it's fair game to mention it. You know, Dove, in the second episode, but also in one of the trailers, she brings that up, you know, how Dick's taking in Rachel the way Bruce took him in, and I think that's really powerful, you know, the parallel there, and you know, seeing that, and we see that in the first episode, so that's why I'm bringing it up now.
So I, man, is, you know, does the job of the pilot, which is to, you know, set the table and introduce us to the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you so much information without overloading your senses.
Uh-huh.
And it also gets you just the right amount of excited in each of to see what happens next. And I think...
Oh, yes.
And I think, you know, a lot of pilots struggle with that in terms of finding the balance of setting the... Also pumping you up for... Like, leaving you pumped up for more. That's a struggle for a lot of pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I do want to touch on that I haven't yet is that... I just want to make a comment on... the very minimal visual effects we've seen, a minimal amount of visual effects we've seen so far, with, you know, Raven and the whole fire and the whole burning thing. Raven's sort of out-of-body spiritual, you know, demon, I call it the demon leap, where she does that thing. It's like a special move in a video game. Right? explanation.
Yeah.
Just from the brief glimpses we've got, I think they look a bit odd. And I put them right now for the minimum, again, the minimal amount that we've seen. I'll put them on par with your stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's not a bad thing for me because I like what the Arrowverse does.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. So I mean, I still can't get over it. Like I was saying, I still cannot... The fact that we're seeing Beast Boy's powers in live action. Like, I just can't. It's ordinary.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I can't wait to... I can't wait to see the episode dedicated to his... Because what it seems like they're going to do is they're going to give us an like a quote-unquote origin episode for each of the characters. I mean, they did that for... the first one was more of a Dick Grayson origin because Raven is still a mystery. And the second one we know is Hawkeye, but we'll get to that. And boy, I can't wait till we get to that because...
I'll just say it right now. I think the second episode is even better than the pilot.
Oh, can I just say, folks, if you haven't watched the episode, this series, its existence is verified and justifiable for the simple fact that I got to see Minka Kelly in a Superman t-shirt.
That was such a cool nod.
Bonus, and I think I've designated her as of right now, for those who are keeping track. I'm losing track. I guess they're writing this stuff down. But I think I've designated her as my Earth 5 wife, so there we go. Anybody keeping track, that's where we are. Is there anything else you want to add before we rate it?
Yeah, let's rate it. Let's rate it. I'm totally with you. I absolutely loved it too.
I'm going to give. I am doing a weekly article for Revenge of the Fans, Tales from the DC Multiverse. And multiverse is spelled so MULT and then V for TV and then ERSE. So I kind of did something.
That's clever.
I pretended I was a rapper and took some letters out, and it's all cool because that's how the rappers do it. And so in my first column for that week, I gave Titans the... It was tied for the best grade of them. So I'm going to go ahead and give it an A+. The same rating I gave in my written review. Jordan, what do you give it?
Our ratings, I would say, I don't know what percentage of the time they match up.
Well, they're pretty solid this week. A and B is not that far apart.
Yeah, that's not that far apart. But this time, we're on the exact same page. Yeah. It's an A+ sure. for me as well.
I would have through the computer and punched you in the face if it was anything other than an A+, because really, I don't see how that, I loved it. Episode 2 was even better, but you'll hear our thoughts on that. I guess we're doing like we do the other DC shows.
A season recap, yeah.
Right, cool. So with that in mind, we want to end, as we always do, by reminding you that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, which is graciously hung on film. There are lots of other Batman-related podcasts there, so if you want more Batman talk. And then you can interact with Jordan and myself via social media. We can do that with you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SmallvilleFanJ and on a lot of other social media, including the DC All Access app and the DC Universe Digital Service at Jordan from Smallville. I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews, so if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, in any case, it would help us out. If you left a sign, just appreciate it a lot to hear from you. So thanks a lot in advance.
And if you'd like to, you're then welcome to do that. Find me on Twitter, at Superhero Sci-Fi, and look up the Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast on Facebook. It's you, if you'd like to join, and we're back there as well. Until next time, we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week, depending on when you're listening to this. Until then, so long, everybody.
Kalana forever. Bye-bye.